I find it kind of ironic that we brought you on to be like an expert on how to combat online harassment. It turns out that you're actually a troll.
I'm really good at it.
This is Up, Up, Down, Down, the show about what's horribly wrong in the world of video games. I'm Alan Pike. Joining us today is Nigel Brook, a 15-year veteran of the video game industry, having worked for Radical Entertainment, later Activision. He's now co-founder of Steam Clock Software. Hi, Nigel.
Hello.
Also joining us today is Grace, also known as GTZ, co-founder of the blog Fat, Ugly, or Slutty. Grace is a world expert in finding humor in the terrible behavior of gamers online, having spoken on this topic at conferences like PAX. Hi, Grace.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
Now is that GTZ or GTZ?
I like to think of it as GTZ because I'm Canadian. Through and through. Even though I totally understand with my friends, my American friends, they just expect it to be GTZ, but no.
So it's GTZ. Jay-Z is Jay-Z and GTZ is you. So our topic today is online disinhibition, if you can pronounce it, which apparently I cannot.
It's difficult.
And so just kind of the general problem of, you know, maybe on the specific end, jerks on Xbox Live, broadening out to how do we get people to play nice together online? Is it possible? Can it be done?
It's absolutely possible. The short form of what the issue is usually having to do with social norms. And so one of the things you can do is, you know, actually establish a social norm that says that this behavior is not okay. And then suddenly everybody else realizes it's not okay. And then nobody's got any sort of inclination to do it. So some of the challenges are, you know, if you've already got this terrible environment, how do you then adjust the social norms later on? And that's what companies like Riot Games and Microsoft are learning to do now.
So Riot, that's the company behind League of Legends, I believe.
Yes, yeah. I am big fans of their science, honestly. They have a million things that they're doing.
League of Legends, for anyone who hasn't played it, is one of these action RTS games, which basically there's some really interesting things in that. It's a relatively new genre of game, but one of the interesting Dota is another one of games in this genre. One of the interesting things about that type of game mechanic is that whenever one of the people on your team dies, it really disadvantages you. So if you have a bunch of people who are really good and then some noob randomly joins your team, it really sucks for you.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Yeah, that's maybe realistic, but the problem is then that means that people are going to be really mean to newbies because they want them to leave. So they're experts in people being jerks on the internet.
Oh, they're super experts. Riot has, oh gosh, how many people? Like a 30-plus team that specifically is the player behavior team. And it's staffed by developers and artists and psychologists and data scientists and I believe statisticians. And their job is exactly to work on player behavior and improving the online experience. So, I mean, one of the things you're talking about in terms of, you know, getting a total noob on your team is they've actually just recently worked on a different kind of matchmaking system where I know that I'm total League of Legends noob, so there's only so much you can take as absolute expert opinion here, but I know that, you know, it's sort of standard to match people based off of skill, right? But then something that League of Legends is now doing is also matching based off of preferred role. So basically, these group of scientists came up with the problem. Like, okay, the problem is that you have 90 seconds to get five people together who all have possibly different goals, put them in the same place, and then somehow make them work together. And, you know, while arguing about who's going to be which role, you also have to figure out what your strategy is going to be. And they're like, this is a really, really hard problem. And so now they're starting this thing where you can actually queue for your type of role or your preferred role on the team. So it's like Riot takes like 20 different sort of angles of improving player behavior and just like incrementally and iteratively starts to work on it. So that's only like the latest thing, but that part of the actual matchmaking is absolutely a response to some of the frustrations everybody has with, you know, getting a really poorly matched team.
So the roles, that's like if you end up getting stuck healing your team, but you don't care about that, so you're going to do a bad job, so people are going to be mad. Is that what you mean by roles?
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know the League of Legends roles incredibly well, but I know you can have like your jungler or something, right? And if somebody wants to be doing top lane all the time, but four of you want to be doing top lane, then that's not going to really work on a five-person team.
Because right, someone's got a jungle.
Because somebody's got a jungle.
You can tell I'm a League of Legends expert.
Yeah, same. My interest with Riot is I've been really, really lucky to be in communication with some of the people on their development team, and actually was also lucky enough to panel with one of them, David Pavlas, during the last PAX Prime 2013, when we talked about sort of the designing for player behavior, right? And so that's, you know, just... This is only one of the most recent things that Riot has done. I'll tell you my most favorite thing that Riot has done, and only because of its absolute like surprising results. So there's something called restricted chat mode. And what that is that if you get sort of, so Riot was experimenting with the fact that if you get, say, temporarily banned from the game, then because League of Legends is free, you're just likely to go on a different free account, start that up, and then you're taking your toxic behavior into the new levels because you've got like a really low level character now, which is really a crappy introduction to the other people who are also low level. So it doesn't really discourage it in that way. So what they looked for was ways to actually encourage people to stay on their accounts by allowing them to still play, but restricting the influence that they had on other people in this negative manner. So they introduced restricted chat mode. So what they do is they usually create a feature and they put it onto their test servers and they, you know, experiment with that. What restricted chat mode is you have a limited number of messages, I believe. And I think you might I'm not sure if you're limited in sort of the content of them, but I think basically it's limited number of messages. So if you're going to communicate with your team, you probably want to actually be sort of concise about it because you only get so many messages to send. But what they found was that a bunch of people who'd already been through the tribunal system and been judged against by the community actually were volunteering to have their chat restricted themselves because they had seen their own behavior through the tribunal system and were horrified at seeing it in black and white. There is nothing in our cultural narrative about trolls being bad people that accounts for this whatsoever. We put people into these bad person boxes, but restricted chat mode volunteers just blew that out of the water. And that's why I love Riot.
That's really interesting.
I think there's definitely two kinds of trolls out there. Like, I think there, you know, there definitely are reformable trolls, people who are behaving bad, you know, for the reason that everyone kind of behaves bad in their life sometimes, that, you know, they've got negative emotions about something, they've got jealousy issues, they've got anger issues, they've got something like that, and they behave badly, and they sort of know that they're behaving badly, but they do it anyways because they can't control themselves. And as with everything else with this kind of behavior, a lot of that stuff just magnifies online. I think there is still a hardcore that probably can't be reformed, but something like League of Legends, it's a pretty competitive game, probably isn't actually the best environment for them. Like, the genuine trolls are going to gravitate to forums where, you know, their trolling can kind of take center stage, right? In order to be an effective jerk at League of Legends, you also have to be pretty good at the game, right?
It's a lot of work.
you can't just be a complete new loser and be a very effective troll, because then the mechanics of the game are such that you're the one that's going to be, that everyone's going to want out of the game because you're useless, right? So, yeah, I think there's definitely something that can be done to correct that kind of behavior in the cases of the people that want to be corrected. And with something like League of Legends, and I'm totally, you know, totally guessing on all this stuff because I've literally never played League of Legends. I only know it from Alan's description of it. But it sounds to me like they've got a situation where they've got a gameplay style that really strongly incentivizes certain types of antisocial behavior. Not necessarily like bad behavior in terms of being insulting or crude or anything like that, but you know, this factor of like the noobs are holding your team down means you're strongly incentivized to get the noobs off of your team. And that's not a like you being a jerk thing. That's like the game is incentivizing you to do that because you're going to play worse if you don't. So you can be totally polite. Alan was giving this example of getting stuck in a game once where he was the noob and someone was just basically saying like, leave, get out of the game. And not necessarily being a jerk about it, like not being crude or insulting or anything like that, but just being like, you have to leave this game.
He filled the entire screen. It just said, leave, yeah. Please leave now, please leave. And I, at first, like, it was so crazy that I didn't realize, I thought it was someone else that he had a negative relationship with. It was just in the first 60 seconds, he could realize I was so catastrophically bad that his team couldn't possibly win if I didn't leave.
And that guy's not really in the wrong either. Like, he's correct. Fact that you were pulling down the rest of the team.
I pretty quickly actually executed a strategy that sounded like a good idea, but it was impossible for me to build anything. Yeah. Like I just got into some rut where it's just like I really should have left. But
it's so complex, that game. It's got such a crazy learning curve. But yeah,
and all games that are competitive online games that are good have some aspect of that, right? Like, it sounds like these action RTSs are a lot worse than other games, but, you know, massively multiplayer games, competitive FPSs, regular real-time strategy games, like, all of them have some aspect of you're going to be incentivized for certain in-game behaviors that come across as kind of crummy, you know, like the whole rage quitting thing is a big one, right? Where if you stay in a game that you're losing, a lot of time that's going to negatively affect your, your overall standings in some way. So the games often unintentionally incentivize people to quit if they look like they're losing. And that's, you know, that's something that comes across as really kind of childish and jerky and certainly can be, but people aren't necessarily doing it just because they're childish jerks. They're doing it because it's in their interest to do so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the interesting thing is that, like, League of Legends is free, but it is a massive game. It is a game with a huge following. And I guess I'll just say that I don't doubt the sincerity of the people that I know at Riot on how badly they want to have more people play, right? So, you know, they think... They're thinking and they're examining very hard about actually what sort of the new user experience looks like or what any skill level looks like, really. And it's like, and when you talk about, like you mentioned, like the spread, right? The spread of bad behavior. And that is like almost exactly in line. It is in line with, a visual that they've actually had in their presentations before where they actually use the words toxic and toxicity for particular reasons because of what they sort of visually invoke. They kind of invoke a little bit of an infection, right? You got it in, like, you know, or like a gas leak or something like that, because they can actually track over the course of several games, like they actually track a timeline on how toxicity spreads. And so they've actually seen that, you know, if player six is having that really, really bad day and sort of, you know, they kind of know what they're doing, but they're still really being really mean to one another, that suddenly the players 3, 5, and 7 who were having sort of okay, but not great days are now pushed into having bad days. And they've now seen that spread to the next games that 3, 5, and 7 plays. And it absolutely can multiply. And so that's precisely the kinds of things that they look at, right? Is sort of that deeper inner game, but also metagame, I guess you could call it, for, you know, combating it and preventing it. And, you know, sort of they have, I forget what all the four pillars are, four or five pillars, but, you know, they seek prevention, they seek reform, they seek sort of shielding other players from toxicities to prevent the spread of the toxic infection. So yeah, it's like when it comes to sort of the other things about what the actual in-game experience is like, that's something that they absolutely have to work on is, you know, if there's an incentive in-game, like by design, to actually just get somebody to quit, then that's a problem.
Yeah, and they're kind of stuck by the, you know, at this point, they can't just change League of Legends so that there's no concept of feeding your opponents by dying.
Like, yeah, I mean, you can affect how it changes ranking or something like that, but I'm not sure what is affected in ranking right now, if you're affected by quitting early or not. So,
whereas you can contrast it like Team Fortress, where, yeah, you can have some guy on your team who's just sucking and dying repeatedly, but at best, it's just kind of funny, and at worst, it's just not helping you.
Yeah. And isn't, how big of a team can you have on Team Fortress 2 as well?
Depends on the server. It's like 10 to 20, I think.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, you won't even notice that.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas, how, I mean, League of Legends is smaller teams, like 5 and 5 or 8 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to talk about another really cool thing that Riot does, because nobody would expect this. But have you guys ever heard of color priming?
That's the idea of, like, if you show people red, they're more likely to be angry or what have you.
Yeah, yeah. So it's this psychological principle. And so Riot actually did something that they, of course, called the Optimus Experiment, because it was about priming. And they had, I believe it was 216 conditions plus a control. And basically they had, I think it was 5 different types of text, whether it was, you know, about you know, about the game itself, like, you know, a sort of a negative connotation wording, or something neutral about the game, or something sort of like, hey, if you're players with high sportsmanships, do better in games, something sort of a positive wording. They had it in multiple different places on screen, and they also had it in 3 different colors, red, white, and blue. And they actually did have a statistically significant difference in the games that had particular combinations of those on whether or not those games would actually be toxic or not afterwards. So when I say that Riot is, you know, kind of going all at it from like 6 different sides, I mean it. It's so crazy.
So if the loading screen just has like a big blue piece of text that says "you're great," then people will be nicer than if they have like a red piece of text that says "you probably shouldn't suck so much, dude."
Pretty much. It was kind of like, you know, players who are, you know, you shouldn't do something like this in your game, and like red text and like that, like, I think that was one of the ways that could, you know, have like a 11% more chance of being a toxic game afterwards or something like that. But essentially they ran these experiments across, you know, millions of games. They basically, man, if I went back to school and knew about all this, I would have totally been a data scientist, because being able to run psychological experiments across millions of people would be amazing. Like this.
It's kind of, I mean, it's kind of unprecedented, actually, where you can have a society, or, you know, in some games, an economy. You go to EVE Online and just as an economist be like, oh, I wonder what would happen if we did this, or
yeah.
Go to an MMO. It's like, all right, well, let's just make it so like everyone, you know, who exhibits this behavior has this consequence, and then just like see how the culture evolves. And
yeah,
you know, like you could probably do like serious research. I mean, there's also the research about games, but also just about people.
Yeah, there's people who do like specific research within games, but I mean, one of my big things sort of since I started Fatigue Leader Study has been about actually getting developers involved in, you know, providing tools for the community to report, to police itself, anything that actually sort of, I know not everybody likes this sort of connotation, but harnessing the power of the passion of the community, because like there are absolutely 100% people out there willing to actually spend some time doing moderation or just like simple voting or adjudication. They are psyched to do it. And so one of the cool things about sort of getting people to sort of talk about this has been expressing the fact that, I mean, we three all know it, but games are software, they're systems, right? And so in the same, like if Riot can have this entire ecosystem to themselves to run millions of experiments, it's because they have the capacity to have an enclosed system, essentially. They don't have to worry about anything else. Like if you want to make sort of the jump to like sexism in the rest of the world, it's like just walking down the street versus, you know, getting, you know, not picked for a job or something like that. Those are sort of two different sort of big picture type of items that you can't really sort of pull all together into one thing to fix all at once. But a game or a game world or a game system is an entire ecosystem that you have complete control over. And so getting sort of players and, you know, getting sort of the publicity for people to realize is like, oh, wait, we've actually got complete control over this technology that we created has been a really fun experience, actually.
You can't actually in real life implement some rules that anytime someone's an asshole, they just can't interact with anyone else as a punishment.
On the other hand, though, I mean, people do certainly seem to be more jerky online than they are in real life.
Would you say?
You definitely got a lot more room for improvement there. Not to say that people aren't jerks in real life, because of course they are, but social norms are a lot easier to enforce and a lot more effectively enforced in real life than they are online. And so, but on the other hand, I guess that gives online something good to shoot for, in that if they do it right, they can at least pull it back to people only being as crummy as they are in real life. You know, that sort of given the right environment and the right incentives, people will at least behave as well as they do in the real world.
Well, that's not the maximum, even. Like, look at Journey, where this is a game where you can't be a jerk. You can only really help the other person. And I'm sure some people have found creative ways to be kind of jerky in Journey, but for the most part, you could just sort of hang out and glow and, you know, make little meeps and moops and, you know, help the other person out. So you can actually have a situation with maybe the other person who you're interacting with in Journey that you are being nice to, and they're being nice to you. They were just playing League of Legends and spewing toxin at everybody and being really angry, and now you've actually created an environment where they're more able to have a positive experience and interact with people positively than they maybe even could in real life.
This is what Nigel was kind of saying about incentive or disincentive within the game too, right? It's like, it's almost an, I mean, I haven't played Journey, but I know enough about it where it's, I can't tell if I should say that it's an accidental or, sorry, a side effect, or actually, you know, a chosen thing to say that you cannot really be a jerk in Journey. Like, you don't have the opportunity. There's nothing that would make it actually sort of better for you in any way to just screw it up, unless you actually just want it to be, you know, just you wanted to grief somebody for a while and that was your goal that day. It's like, it doesn't help you in any way. It might, you know, give you a laugh and waste some time for an evening or something, but there's no incentive or disincentive. It's just you should probably help them, right?
I think it's absolutely, like, that was what they were going for in Journey, that they set out to make a game that had forced cooperative multiplayer, and that was part of their thematic concept for the game. And that's why the game works the way it does, right? You can't pick who you're playing with. You're not playing with the same person necessarily through the whole game. Like, you know, you're always only playing with one other person, but who it is changes. And there's certain events that really are more significant if there's the other person there, particularly towards the end of the game. So, I mean, it's clearly something that they were going for, but I don't know how well that generalizes. Like, I think it's something that's cool, and it's something that speaks to, yeah, there is yet another approach to this stuff, which is to just make it against the rules of the game to be jerks. But I don't know how feasible that is as a general technique. Like, I don't think there are a lot of games with that aren't extremely similar to Journey.
Well, I can give an example. So, I mean, it's true that you have to sort of tailor it and tailor the design concepts to different kinds of games. But somebody else that I was on the panel with, her name is Kate, and she works for ArenaNet, and she works on Guild Wars 2. So Guild Wars 2 launched at the official out of beta launch, I believe, was end of August 2013. And during beta, sort of everybody kind of got away with a little bit of stuff. And so all of a sudden beta launched, and then the community team came in and they kind of threw down the hammer when it came to people's usernames or their in chat or whatever. And so everybody's like, whoa, why am I getting banned? And all this stuff. And everybody was freaking out. So Regina, she actually, she's, I think she's head of community support. She agreed to do a Reddit AMA. And so the idea was, if you want to know why you were banned, you can post your username and we will look it up and we will tell you, but everybody will see why. And so they did. And everybody was like, all right, I would love to see why I was banned. And so they posted and they're like, okay, well, you said this, or you said the N-word, or you said that you wanted to screw your mom's dog or something like that. And everybody afterwards like, wow, you deserved that. You really did. How could you not even remember that you said that? And they're like, yeah, I totally don't remember saying that, but yeah, I guess I did, type of thing, right? And so it was just this thread filled with everybody else in the community being like, we are enforcing the norms and you clearly broke them. And it's amazing you didn't even realize. So that was just, you know, the username side of it. So that was August 2013. And cut to like, I don't know, maybe a year later. And I saw an article of somebody who was playing Guild Wars 2 and, you know, heard it was a really friendly community. And they, you know, go in and so they're asking, okay, and they're going around and everybody's helpful and everybody's fine. And they ask their friend, like, so was I just lucky? Like, no, it's like that everywhere. And it turns out that there's a lot of design choices in the gameplay itself in Guild Wars 2 that actually really enforces cooperation. You could almost, not really enforces, but it's like it heavily encourages it, or it doesn't even allow for competition where they don't want there to be anything. There's something that's called a dynamic event. So I don't know, if you think about it in, say, WoW or some other MMO, if you see like a monster, like a big monster, like several levels above you, and you walk over to it and you start fighting it, and then everybody else kind of comes around, right? And you don't always kind of, if you're with your group and you kind of fight it and then somebody else kind of comes along, they could kill steal it. There's actually no kill stealing in Guild Wars 2. What you'll just have is everybody shares in the experience. And I think the dynamic events are kind of related to that, in just like a thing happens and then it just sort of automatically parties you guys together. And so it just, there's an inherent cooperation with everybody that it's like, it's actually designed into the game where all that matters is that everybody gets the experience and everybody has fun. So it's tailored to different kinds of games and what you can actually do to sort of encourage cooperation in some ways, but it's definitely possible. It's just, you have to be smart about it.
I think there's a big trade-off when you're looking at designing an MMO between making gameplay decisions and mechanics decisions that people will find fair versus things that people will find pleasant.
Yeah, I mean, Guild Wars 2 doesn't really have competition in that sense, right?
Exactly. If you look at World of Warcraft in the early days, like people back in the day when it was a real game, then it was exactly like you say, like people would just like quote unquote ninja loot, right? Like if someone clicked on it first, then they would get this amazing thing that they didn't even need and that some guy needed way more and stuff like that.
There's no ganking in Guild Wars 2.
Right.
And it's like, if we talk about norms, it's like, in League of Legends or other things like even Counter-Strike, right? They've got to change these norms that are already well established. But now, Guild Wars 2, a year and a half later, the norms have been established. It's like there's no sort of impetus to actually make things more negative because this is what you do when you're in that game, in the same way that you start talking about fucking your mom when you're in Counter-Strike, right? So that's just what the norms are.
Yeah, I think that... that's a very positive sign that they were able to create that. I want to do a sponsor, and then I want to talk about Titanfall and what they're doing. So this episode is brought to you by Castro. Castro is the most elegant podcasting app on Earth. And if you're not using it right this second, you are doing it wrong. Castro has all the features you need in a podcast app and nothing more. I've been using Castro since the very first beta of the app. And there was one feature that I really needed, which is continuous playback, because I listen to podcasts back to back. I'm not sure if it's officially announced. I'm pretty sure it's officially announced that that's coming. So that is basically now 100% of all podcast features you would ever need. So I highly recommend it. Get it now at www.castro.fm. And then I guess once you have it, go subscribe to Up Up Down Down. So the kind of latest news that I've come across in this world of, you know, can we get people to play nice together, or what can we do about this player behavior issue, is Titanfall, which is obviously this really popular Xbox game that's just come out on that, I guess, the first big Xbox One sensation. And they've instituted this issue of hell banning. For anyone who's not familiar with hell banning, obviously when you ban somebody, they just can't participate anymore. And like Grace mentioned, people will tend to create a new account just to get around it. But a really devious, or at least creative way of banning someone, is banning them in such a way that they can only interact with other people who have also been banned. And so to me, that's just like gleefully, like, I feel like they're getting what they deserve. And, you know, like, now you're doomed to just live in a world where everyone is screwing each other's mom's dogs and these sorts of things. Like, that's just, you know.
Where did I come up? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and that's to me, I mean, the thing I'm curious about, though, I mean, definitely I'm glad that you know, people are being horrible or being segregated away from the people who just want to have a reasonable game and communicate with other human beings. But the thing that I'm most curious about is, does that business of separating the horrible people and concentrating them create like a super horrible person that never would have existed? Like, is it like breeding this one really aggressive type of dog together over and over again?
It's a troll, eugenics. It's a troll eugenics program.
Yeah.
That's my own fault. So another word for what you're talking about is Prisoner's Island.
Right. It's Australia.
And, yeah. So it's just this idea. And there has been sort of some concern in advance of Xbox One doing this. But the thing, and I don't know, I think my superpower sometimes might be relentless optimism, is because the interactions that I've actually had, once again, PAX panels, with talking with people with Microsoft at Microsoft, is, you know, everybody wants to do really well. I guess I could probably just back it up a little bit. So I guess it was 2013. So I was lucky enough to be, I asked the Extra Credits guys. So Extra Credits is this small little sort of 6 to 8 minute weekly web show that sort of deals with topics in gaming. So whether it's gaming culture or game design or anything sort of about the gaming industry. And so I asked if they do an episode on harassment, but specifically about dev tools, which is the thing that I started focusing on for a while. And so James Portnow, you know, got my feedback and feedback from a few other people. They did the episode, and he chose in the episode to actually ask viewers to sort of, let's start with Microsoft. Let's see if they can implement some of these easy ideas. And so one of the easy ideas was, since they're already taking metrics, like James already knew that they were already taking metrics on how often, for example, a particular player is muted by other players, then perhaps once they've reached a certain threshold, they could just be automatically pre-muted for everybody, because clearly that's just what everybody's going to do anyway, right? So just kind of one of the ideas to sort of get people thinking about the ideas of systems and dev tools and whatnot, right? So after that, Microsoft actually called James in, and he had a big, long meeting with them. And they were already wanting to do some of the stuff, and then the Xbox One was coming out. And so we weren't able to find out a whole lot about what was happening by the time the PAX panel came out in August, but we were able to sort of talk about some of their guiding principles. And then the Xbox One came out, and they were able to sort of elaborate on what the actual systems were. So, for example, Prisoner's Island. What that actually means is that you are somebody who has actually, from my understanding, gone through and been sort of rated poorly by other players, and I think also sort of had a bunch of warnings along the way. So on some level, you kind of knew you were going there. You kind of had all these chances, and sort of, you know, it's supposed, I think that it's supposed to be a little bit difficult to get there, right? You're supposed to, like, everybody starts off good, then you kind of fall into neutral, and then, you know, the bad people. It should be like a really sort of small percentage. But all throughout my communications with them has kind of been like, you know, you can start small and just see what it looks like and then adjust on the fly. And I think that Microsoft actually, this is where my relentless optimism is that now that they feel that they've actually got a chance to sort of really work on this, because I think you know they had some trouble with it before, is that now they can actually sort of do proof of concept things and then work on things as sort of a platform. So, for example, they actually have a thing now where community members can just do a simple sort of green, red, pass sort of voting on whether a particular username is offensive or not, right? And so that's sort of the whole harnessing the community thing. But I see that thing, and I think that's a platform. If you've actually built something that the community can actually vote on, there's all sorts of things you can expand that to. So I think they're actually taking this in terms of, you know, the mistakes they made in the past is sort of the 5-star system, right, that just sort of existed and nobody did anything reasonable with. It was like everybody on Xbox Live had 5 stars, therefore everybody was amazing, right? And nobody was a
jerk,
which
we know
right?
is not actually the case.
Yeah, so it's like if everybody's got gold stars, then nobody has gold stars, right? But I think they're actually sort of taking it to heart that they've got to take sort of a consistent, continuous, iterative approach. I see it as the same as security. We never stop working on security because hackers never stop working on security, right? And so you have to constantly be thinking about player behavior and you have to always be iterating upon it because people will find ways or the system will break down and it'll expose its weaknesses. So I think that, you know, Prisoner's Island, I don't know how well it'll work for, you know, the particular super breed, but I think that whatever happens, that they're going to be open to improvement.
So something I think is interesting and related to bad behavior is the distinction, which we sort of went in the direction of, but didn't get all the way, the distinction in between someone who has abusive behavior in a way that, you know, they're being negative, toxic, offensive, and then the business of trolling, where it's not necessarily someone being angry, but someone trying to break the game. Mm-hmm. So, for example...
Or griefing?
Yeah, I guess that's maybe a better way of putting it, is griefing, like people purposely trying to screw up, like, let's lure the giant dragon into town and have him light everyone on fire.
Yeah.
Or, there's this plague that only exists in this one isolated place, and let's try to infect everyone with it so everyone's dying.
Yeah.
is the distinction between those things interesting from the perspective of trying to get them get people to stop, or is it all sort of like, is there any disadvantage to using a system that's intended to stop people from calling each other horrible things, but maybe is there a system that would stop that but wouldn't stop griefing and trolling, or is it just kind of all going to get caught by the same system?
I think there would probably be different problems. You know, in the same way that sort of the restricted chat mode versus the honor system versus the tribunal system in League of Legends all sort of tackle things in different ways, I think that griefing is kind of like, you know, sort of the anti-cheating, sort of that's kind of like the design problem you're working on there, right? So if you actually find a way to cheat in a game, then that is, in some ways, it's kind of griefing because you're just kind of screwing up the game experience for everybody. I think that might be different than abusive behavior. And I gotta say, I actually am a big fan of some of the raids that I've seen, like, videos for.
I love that stuff. I mean, I'm not really a griefer by any stretch of the imagination. I don't have time to do that, even if I did. But I definitely find other people finding exploits in games and systems entertaining. And so when I see somebody's done something that, like, obviously was not even remotely intended in a way that causes a whole bunch of chaos, I take a certain amount of glee and fascination from that. But obviously it's not, if no one else is having fun except the person who's doing it. It's, you know, like you say, it's very similar to cheating.
I definitely enjoy that kind of stuff in single player games. Like, I love watching like glitch speedrun videos and stuff like that, but I always steer away from that stuff with multiplayer games because I find it kind of sad, you know? Like, in a single player game, breaking the game is kind of like an interesting challenge, and the people that are doing it sort of know they're doing something that's not the official right way to do things, but they found something cool and they're going to kind of make their own fun. Whereas in online games, really, people that are doing that, for the most part, know that they're damaging other people's experience of the game by doing it. And, you know, that rubs me the wrong way. That doesn't seem sporting or fun anymore. That does just seem like like unpleasant behavior, intentionally unpleasant behavior.
That's okay. I'll be the bad person on that one. That's fine. There was a video that I saw of in Star Trek Online that, oh gosh, how did it work? It was like a Federation ship versus Klingon ship. And so somebody, they actually like got, you know, the other faction, like a friend of theirs in the other faction, to beam them into that ship. And so then they killed everybody on the bridge, but then it would just respawn. And so then they would fill like the Federation ship with like the other side. And so they'd respawn on the ship and they'd just keep killing. And it was actually really hilarious, but I get it. And then the devs afterwards were kind of like, okay, okay, you guys, you know, it was pretty funny, but we're going to fix that.
I've told the story on the show before, but I ran some online games that were much less sophisticated than Star Trek Online, but people would find exploits, and the entertaining thing was, of course, to exploit them. So in this political game, someone was able to assassinate everyone, other person in the game 20 times. And so then people inherited the position from their children or from their, you know, ancestors, and then everyone was like, you know, Fidel Castro the 23rd and Bill Clinton the 18th and things like this, because they've been assassinated so many times. So he won that round.
Yeah, we're bad people. I'm okay with that.
That's part of the impulse, though, that leads to this kind of behavior, right? Like the fact that we find that funny and you know, it can be a bit of a guilty pleasure. Like, that same impulse is what, when it's taken to the next level, becomes actually engaging in real griefing behavior, right? Like that, you know, that's sort of the downfall of human behavior in some respects, is that other people in pain is kind of funny, ultimately. and you can't, it's hard to get away from that, right? Like a lot of, that's the foundation of a lot of comedy is people hurting themselves, right?
Slapstick.
There's the famous Mel Brooks quote, right? Tragedy is when I stub my toe. Comedy is when you fall down an open manhole cover and die.
And that actually has the unexpected, and that's what is so funny about these griefing sort of videos and the crazy bugs people find to exploit. It's not like just making someone sad, to me, is not funny, or like I would not, if it's just going around and like making it so that someone just can't walk and their character's just stuck there and then they're just sad. Like, that's not funny at all. But if you make it so that just like everyone's character can suddenly run at like 200 times speed and it's like the game is like tearing apart at the seams, that's awesome. Or at least like sure for a little while.
And I mean, it's on some level, it's also about, I think griefing is also a little bit about the seriousness of the victim. And it's like, if somebody's getting really, really like smashing their keyboard angry at the fact that, you know, they're stuck on the ship and are respawning and getting killed or something like that, and, you know, can't walk away from the game, that's probably part of why the griefing ends up being so funny, because they're so invested. And it's not to say that games aren't important or anything, but I think that's in some ways part of the miscommunication about why things like, you know, on stuff that ends up on Fat Ugly or Slutty will seem, people want to brush it off because you're like, oh, you should just not even worry about it because, haha, I don't take it seriously, therefore you shouldn't. In the same way that griefers are like, haha, I don't take it seriously, therefore you shouldn't, and it's funny that you do, or something like that. And it's sort of this miscommunication between, you know, what actually is serious for a person and isn't. So, you know, so, I'm a little bit of a bad person for sort of enjoying why people are so serious about the actual gameplay aspect of it, I guess, in the griefing appreciation.
Yeah, in the big scheme of the issues in the world, the fact that you're responding, and it's not the worst. So I just wanted to, like, make a point here, because we've mentioned Fat, Ugly, or Slutty a few times, and if you've never heard of or have not seen Fat, Ugly, or Slutty, you might be wondering, what the heck is that, and is that, or is it...
It's not exactly work safe.
Yeah. So do you want to tell us, Grace, what is Fat, Ugly, or Slutty?
It is a dumb fail blog website that I started. a bunch of friends of mine are, Ashley in particular, she's a really hardcore Gears of War player. And one day we were all sitting in IRC and she said, "Oh, I've been getting all these messages lately and they're always the same. I'm either fat and ugly or I'm a slut." And we were like, "Haha, show us, show us." And so she took some screenshots, she sent us some audio, and we were just laughing so hard because there was just something so over the top and ridiculous about it. And so I hate to use the pun, but so impotent about it. It was crazy. And so I just threw off a casual joke. I was like, "Haha, you should totally put this on a website and show everybody." And then a couple minutes later, we realized that was actually a good idea. And I'm like, "Crap, we should actually do that." So we got the domain name, set up a little WordPress site, and our friend Jennifer, a little while later, got our awesome sort of 1950s housewife sort of get back in the kitchen and make me a sandwich sort of 50s theme. And probably like only a week and a half later, it hit Reddit. And the highest I saw it on the front page was 13th place or something like that. But that graph still scares me a little bit. It was like probably spiked to about 1 million page views in that day and almost 200,000 visitors. And then there was the Kotaku interviews. And so I've just been kind of going ever since. But I've taken a break from the blog and I'll probably go back to it or something. But I've actually been really happy with it sort of working in this sort of archival format, because what it did and what I did not expect was that it showed a lot of people, and particularly men, it showed a lot of men that this was a thing that happened and this is a thing that regularly happened, and anything that they had in their head of what it supposedly looked like was nothing like the reality. They were just, I mean, even myself, I usually play sort of in gender anonymous fashion online. My username is GTZ. Nobody knows what that means. They assume I'm a man. And so I don't really get these messages like Ashley did. And so it was sort of a shock for me. And that's kind of why I laugh, because we're talking about the nature of humor. And I think part of the nature of humor is surprise. I was surprised because I was shocked. And I hadn't really expected that my regular day-to-day friends were receiving these so often and were so used to them. But, you know, confronted with the screenshots, there was sort of no denying it anymore, right? And so, I don't know, we take sort of a joking approach to everything. I kind of try and make sort of I've sort of made the writer, the author on that site, sort of a character that's like with rose-colored glasses of, you know, sort of taking the most charitable view of what the message sender would be sending, regardless of the rape threats or the death threats involved. But yeah, it's been fun. And it's really sort of helped me understand a lot more about what's going on in the world and helped me sort of advocate for these dev tools. And I'm really happy with sort of the feedback gotten back from Riot and Microsoft and, you know, making a change.
I find that like fat, ugly, or slutty, especially, you would not be surprised to hear that I do not receive gendered threats on, well, I guess I do. And it's like, you know, you're gay, you have no balls or whatever, but it doesn't quite have the same tune. But looking through Fat, Ugly, or Slutty, the ones that sort of having the premise described to me, the ones that I expected are on there, just things like, "Are you a girl? I didn't know girls play video games. Wow." Right. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's sort of what I would imagine someone who presented themselves as female might get playing games. But then there's ones just like, this is like literally an example that I'm not making up. I'm reading, "Ha ha ha, you are rapeable."
Yeah.
It's like, that just really took it. That's
right?
Not funny. But I mean, it's just so unexpected. Like this, the message starts out nice. It's like, haha, like maybe they're laughing at something. No, that's okay. Wow.
No.
And, yeah, it was very educational to me anyway, and I think to a lot of people, and that's why it got, you know, it was worthy of a lot of attention from people. And, you know, probably one of the many things that has instigated people like Riot, and in particular, considering that, like, a very large percentage of these things are specifically from Xbox Live, you know, maybe just no one plays on the PlayStation Network these games, but...
Well, it could be a self-selection process in the submissions that we receive from people just because they see Xbox and whatnot, but no, I think generally people accept that Xbox is often pretty bad, but... You know, that was just what was so interesting about the Xbox One marketing campaign. You know, like I said, they've had all these sort of different initiatives that they're starting out with in the Xbox One reputation system and all that. But they actually advertise no jerks They actually put it on their marketing materials, like in giant white capital letters, Xbox Live, no jerks. And everybody was like, what are you talking about? So I actually have a turkey follow-up. Oh, so wait, that wasn't,
that Xbox Live, no jerks, that's, I thought that was them saying, we're discouraging jerks from joining, but what they were advertising is that jerks are not present?
That jerks will be dealt with, I guess you could say, because of things such as, you know, the eventual fall into Prisoner's Island and the reputation right. system that goes that you are generally going to be matched with people within your reputation level. And so it happens to be the case that Prisoner's Island will come out of that. So I'm curious to see if they're going to adjust it, because they're going to monitor it. I know they are. And I don't know if they're going to create that super being or not, and if they're going to want to sort of adjust that out of the population. But yeah.
They do also have just banning available as a tool as well, right? That's one of the advantages that that Xbox Live has over any kind of free network, is that you've put some money up front and you've associated with your console ID, and they can basically permanently ban you, like to the point where you would need to purchase a new console and have a new credit card to purchase your Xbox Live account with. I don't know if they actually do that in cases of just online misbehavior. Like, I know they do it for piracy. They have permanently banned all sorts of Xboxes for being modded, because, you know, this is not Xbox's ones, but like Xbox 360s back in the day, that, you know, that was a big thing for them, is when they had ways of detecting piracy and they would just permanently ban those Xboxes and you could not play online with them anymore.
And they do it for cheating as well.
Cheating, something like that. But I don't know if they do it just for bad behavior, but they certainly could. Like, it's technically possible for them to do it.
Absolutely.
And the fact that you've put some money up there is a strong disincentive against that, right? Like,
well,
getting
it's not
a
just
new
that,
Xbox.
It's your account too, right?
Yeah. Getting a new Xbox, getting a new Xbox Live account and spending the money on all of that is a lot worse than having to get some throwaway Gmail account and sign up again.
And having to explain to your mom why the $400 Xbox that you just got for Christmas, you need a new one.
And that's what's been so interesting about what happened with Sony's launch for the PS4 and the Twitch integration. You know, there was two sort of interesting things about the Sony launch. Is prior to the Sony launch, they actually came out and said, I haven't seen anybody else, any other company do this, said that if they see you harassing on, say, Twitter, they reserve the right to keep you off the PlayStation Network. And that just blew my mind. And I was like, the thing is, I'm talking a lot about sort of things that were sort of announced or sort of are ongoing. And only Riot that I've seen so far has actually been really open and forthcoming and presenting at GDC. You can actually find videos online of their results of all of their various experiments. But I don't know how open and Microsoft and Sony are going to be about the results for their sort of ongoing efforts. But I actually don't have any idea how much Sony has taken that really to heart from what they said, where it's like, and I've never seen anybody say this, that they would actually take something from a different service and say, no, we don't want you on our service. So that was one thing. And the other thing was actually what I found out about the Twitch integration and how easy that was going to be. I was like, there is no way that Sony has any concept of what they are unleashing upon the world. I was like, because their PlayStation Home was sort of notoriously bad for just having your avatar walking around and having other avatars basically rub up all over you and stuff like that, right? So they had no concept of, they were never, ever involved in the harassment conversations that I had, basically ever, as somebody who actually knows what was going on. And then sure enough, they got hit with all sorts of stuff in terms of, like, you know, just sexual content or horrifying content or just all sorts of stuff. And they've got to, you know, sort of backtrack and reestablish the norms in their own community. And it's a hard position to be in.
You got to criticize Nintendo's approach to online in general, just because they're way behind, like more than a generation behind. But one thing that they really do understand is that every tiny little piece of power you give to someone to communicate to someone else online has a potential to be offensive, and pretty much if they can turn it into a dick, they're going to make it a dick, basically. Right?
Don't they have dick checking algorithms on
they
pictures
do
or something? Yeah,
they do,
which is amazing.
And I can, I mean, as soon as you put a camera on the DS and then you have any even vague internet transfer, right, then that's what you got to have. Especially when it's like mostly children, you like really, really. And that's the kind of where Nintendo is coming from. And their various attempts, like the sort of downside of that is if they make it impossible to communicate something offensive, it's pretty hard to communicate something non-offensive too.
Which it is very hard to communicate anything effectively with any of Nintendo's online services. Like, it's
heart smiley it's face question mark.
Well, it's just hard to get them hooked up, right? Like, you need these, you know, I'm going to generate this friend code and give it to this person, and they're going to type in like this 20 digit number in order to connect with me. And there's basically no way to interact with people unless you've chosen to connect with them on the Nintendo services.
Yeah, it's like you say, intentionally annoying, which has the advantage that you don't have someone online randomly. And I'm sure they have, you know, it's just not entirely being about offensive, it's also like, you know, people potentially being, you know, predatory behavior and other things. When you have a population that's primarily for children, they're much more concerned about not allowing bad behavior than they are about allowing good behavior when they're looking at online. So I had in the show notes something, and I just kind of, now it's occurred to me that maybe everyone has seen this. So Grand Theft Auto obviously is a game kind of based around bad behavior, more or less.
GTA.
for better, for worse. And, you know, it can be fun in your own sandbox of blowing up cars.
Problem with GTAs, it's fantastic, really. So,
yeah. And well, and then you feel like, should I be enjoying this so much? But the GTA 5, and I think this had existed to some degree in previous incarnations, but particularly they spent a lot more attention on it in GTA 5, is the online component. Have you, either of you guys played this or seen much about it?
No.
I have not seen much about this.
So GTA 5's online component is basically, and they just call it GTA 5 Online, has the problems that you would expect around when you try to make a multiplayer open world experience around a game that's just about causing chaos and making just everything blow up and people
dying. It's a game about griefing.
It's a game about griefing. And so there's this interesting, and I'll link it up. I believe it started as a Reddit sort of self-post, as one of this end up getting like best of or whatever. And this guy's telling a story of how in Grand Theft Auto, in 5 Online, you have sort of options about how you want to interact with other people. And so at first you're like, oh yeah, I'm going to be like, you know, I like the, I can't remember the name of the black guy, but like, you know, he's pretty friendly and, you know, he wants to help out and he's being reasonably nice and he's going to cooperate with other people. But they're, despite all the various ways to, you know, they're nonviolent ways to interact with other players in Grand Theft Auto 5, no one really reciprocated in a nonviolent way. Pretty much he was just like, hey, like, I've got a car, like, want to come on a ride? And like, he's not actually saying that. He's just kind of like drives up and like, he's got his car and sort of like maybe gestures or whatever. And someone's like, oh, okay. And they get in the car and then shoot him in the face. And it's just like, okay. And so there's three characters in Grand Theft Auto. There's the crazy one is called Trevor, and he's the most memorable one because he's like completely psychopathic, like on drugs and just pretty much all the horrible things you can think of a person. That's like one of the three characters. And he was just wondering, like, is it possible to not be a Trevor? And so we spent all this time trying to like find someone who would play along, and he tells the story of getting a helicopter and like saying like, okay, would someone like come on a joyride with me and see the city? And he, 6 or 7 times people did, like I said, and they killed him and took the helicopter. But on the 8th time, someone got in and they just sort of like had a great time. They flew around the city and they looked at the vistas and saw some cool stuff and did a few quests together. And they landed on the top of like the tallest building in town, and they're watching the sunset together. And he's like, wow, maybe not everyone is a Trevor. But then he was like looking at the back of the guy. He's kind of thinking to himself, he's getting a little bored, and then shot his friend in the back of the head. He's like, yeah, I guess we're all Trevors.
Michael and Franklin.
Michael and Franklin.
Yes. In GTA 5.
Not that either of them are model behaviors either, but I just thought that was like a pretty good example of like, yeah, that's what you would probably expect without not even having played Grand Theft Auto Online. That's kind of what you would expect the way that people would interact with each other to be.
I guess there's no investment, hey?
Yeah, exactly.
I think there's something to be said for there definitely being some games that are like that, as long as everyone kind of knows what they're getting into. I've heard similar stories to that about a lot of these sort of multiplayer survival-y kind of games, like DayZ and
Rust.
Some of the other ones, Rust, that, you know, those are set up so that being kind of super paranoid about other people is sort of part of the gameplay, right? That other people can kill you and you just have to take that into account. And I think there's something to be said for having places where you just say like, yeah, that's part of the world. Where it always, you know, what always sucks is when you get the dissonance between how things are supposed to be and how things are, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't seem weird if a bunch of criminals are shooting each other in the back of the head, but it does seem weird if if a bunch of people that are supposed to be cooperating are all killing each other, or if people are just going around cities killing random citizens and stuff like that, right? Like, you get that disconnect between what the world fiction of the game is and what's actually happening. But if you build that stuff into your world fiction such that it makes sense, at least people know what they're getting into. And that, I mean, that can certainly be a good tension to just have to be terrified of every other person. And if you set up the world fiction of like, yeah, this is a post-apocalyptic, like every man for himself, stock up on canned food and shotguns and make sure that no one gets you, like that kind of paranoia is a good thing to have going on in the game, right?
So there's, I mean, that was part of, you know, that was a joke that we had on the designing for player behavior panel that we had, was everybody take a shot when we say the word norms, right? So there's norms that are just what everybody sort of establishes sort of in the game in terms of the social interactions. But then, like you said, if the game like Rust or one of the other games is like, you should probably, you should probably have this sort of psychopathic, paranoid thing in order to actually play the game. Like, this is the world that we have designed. This is the escapism that we're actually trying to go for, or something like that. So, yeah, there's definitely a difference there.
Those norms, like, go beyond just things like, is it okay to shoot someone in the back of the head or swear at them? There was so in World of Warcraft, this is a kind of a compromise that all generally MMOs make, is that players, if you can walk through other players, which does violate the fiction of the world, like they're not trying to say, oh, everyone's a ghost and you can walk through each other. It's just that if you can't walk through people, then you can just have like, oh, you go into some shop or someone's house and then like three or four people just stand in the doorway and then go AFK and then just can't leave because they're in the way or something. You know what I mean? Like, there's way too much potential for griefing. So you can walk through each other. But there was someone who did a study that actually found that even though people could walk through each other, they didn't. They would avoid it. Because it was like kind of perceived as rude and sort of like if two people were walking down a path in a straight line towards each other, then they would like walk to the side and like walk around each other even if they didn't need to. And when I heard that, I was like, that doesn't make... Actually, yeah, I do that.
That's so funny in terms of systems, you know, the availability of systems. That's right. You're like, if you just... okay. So I think probably my favorite game, and I don't even know how I can really tell you about this, but it's multiplayerpiano.com. And so basically you go to this, and I think they've actually changed it. I don't think they used to have chat available anymore. Basically you go there and you are a little mouse cursor, and it might even show your location on there. But it's just this piano and there's everybody else's mouse cursors. And so everybody is just, you know, clicking on the piano and some people can, you know, make music or whatever, right? But my favorite game with this multiplayer piano, it's literally just a keyboard, is to go and place my cursor on somebody else's cursor, and they at first they don't kind of realize it, and then they move and then I follow them. I put my cursor on their cursor, and they freak out, and they start going all around the screen, and there's no consequences. It's literally just me putting my cursor on top of their cursor, but they really don't want it.
I'm doing it to someone right now, and they do not like it.
That's the best game ever made.
Sorry, Stanley.
Well, I mean, that's like, that's kids in the backseat of the car, right? Stop touching me. Stop touching me. Stop looking at me. Stop copying me. Stop breathing my air, right?
Yeah. That's awesome.
I find it kind of ironic that we brought you on to be like an expert on how to combat online harassment. It turns out that you're actually a troll.
I'm really good at it.
You know exactly what gets under people's skin now. Oh, man. That's awesome. Well, I think that's like a perfect show on that topic. So thanks a lot for joining us, Grace. Thanks to our listeners for joining us. You can check out the show notes and various links to Grace's panels and other things that we talked about at upup.fm. Or you can follow us on Twitter at upupshow. See you next week.
So you know how I was saying the other day when we were recording with Angelina that I hadn't played much Super Mario 3D Land? Well, I got called in as a pinch hitter this afternoon to help out because Sam's trying to collect enough stars to unlock the last level of the game. And on the last level of the game, there's like this long tram ride you have to go on between the two sections. And basically every time, like we played through this level like, I don't know, probably 20, 30 time, something like that, before we actually finally managed to beat Bowser. And like every single time, one of Jack or Sam picked the other's character up and threw them off the train.
So they're learning at an early age how to interact with other people in video games. Yeah, that's excellent. But of course, once the other person, you know, once Sam has done it to Jack, then Jack feels justified doing it to Sam.
And yeah.
I mean, you're like, I'm not going to help you guys beat this if you're just going to keep throwing each other into the lava.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Mario games are the worst for that kind of unintentional griefing. Like, I mean, those were intentional, but it's actually extremely easy in those games because you don't walk through the other players. Like, you can knock them out of the way or bounce them off your head those games are just the absolute worst for completely unintentional griefing and just knocking people off when you don't intend to, and ugh.
How old are they?
My kids are 10, 8, and 4.
Oh, yeah. That's good sibling rivalry time.
Yeah, and so Jack and Sam, the two boys, are the 10 and the... Or actually, I guess he's not 8 yet. He'll be 8, like, Saturday. the two boys, and then the youngest is a girl. But she also plays with us. She's just not as good.
She's four.
She's pretty good for a four-year-old. Like, having two older brothers that are that into video games.
Yeah. Her dexterity is going to be insane.
Yeah, you get pretty good.
Yeah.
She mastered the iPad at like a year and a half. So.
It's insane. My two nephews, one of them's 7 and one of them's 3. And the three-year-old is totally fine in Minecraft. He can hold his own. It's crazy. And I'm like, I didn't learn dual thumbsticks until Dead Rising in 2007, right? So, I mean, he's just on it. It's crazy.
Yeah, if we think that people playing against, that we play against in online games are just too good to beat now, wait until.
Yeah, we're screwed.
I can't follow Minecraft. Like, I watch the kids play their, like, online Minecraft games, and they're moving too fast for me. And I'm not, like, some neophyte at that. Like, I played a lot of online Unreal Tournament back when I still had time to play multiplayer games. But there's something just even more chaotic and crazy about the Minecraft online servers, because there's just so much, like, there's so many people and so much stuff going on. And yeah,
it's also often heavily modded, right? Like, you might think you understand Minecraft, but they're playing in a version of the game where, like, every 5 minutes, suddenly all the such and such turns into lava or something.
Oh, yeah.
And it's...
the modding that goes on the servers is just out of control.